Hi, friends, especially friends of Loving Conflict, my new book that we're going to be reading from tonight. Welcome. So far, we're in chapter one and about to enter stage two, the difference stage, also known as the conflict stage. So this is kind of the meat of the matter right here. Yesterday, we talked about the infatuation stage and how it's our belief that it's your universal human needs which help you pick your partner. And now we're going to talk about, since your unconscious has picked the perfect partner for you, somebody who loves meeting all the needs of yours that you have a hard time meeting, and you are really good at meeting the needs of theirs that they have a hard time meeting, why does something go wrong in so many relationships? And here's our idea based on embodied NVC and the teamwork mediation process as to why that happens. So I will read from the book. Our official name for the second stage of relationship is the difference stage. Unfortunately, it is more commonly experienced as the conflict stage. Since conflicts are caused by misunderstood differences. So yesterday we talked about how your unconscious picks someone who has the difference which you need. So relationships are really about difference, and getting the benefit of that difference is what makes the infatuation stage and also the mature relating stage, stage three, the most fun. But this stage, there's something about differences that we aren't very skilled at in this culture, and we think that's what's we're probably going to be reading about right now. Of course, this doesn't have to be the case. There is a fork in your relationship right here. I was actually, one of the titles I was playing with is, there's a fork in your relationship. Or your relationship is forked. I have that kind of sense of humor. Because without knowing about needs, you are much more likely to take the harder path, the one that leads you to conflict. Ideally, the different stage of your relationship would be spent coming to understand what it is about the two of you that caused your infatuation and attraction in the first place. However, once the conflicts start, most couples are so afraid they are losing the positives of the infatuation stage that they can't see the benefits, are actually still trying to assert themselves, but this time through conflict. So the conflict is your relationship trying to go deeper. That's what we're about to discuss. The fights in the conflict stage seem to keep raising the question, did I pick the right person? And how could I have invited someone so different into my life? What was I thinking? It does seem that way when you lose contact with the benefit of difference and you're just suddenly confronted with the fact that you've invited someone into your life who's incredibly different than you. The conscious mind asks these questions because it doesn't understand the real unconscious drive behind relationships. This is going to be a major theme of the way that I do this work, that the unconscious is a huge part of what causes relationships to happen, what makes them so great, what causes them to go into conflict, how you can fix that conflict, and how you can get the real benefit of being in relationship. All of that has to do with the unconscious. Since we don't know much about the unconscious in this culture, you're kind of stuck without that. But the truth is, feelings are not a conscious thing. You don't control your feelings, they arise in you. Universal human needs are not a conscious phenomenon. They're something that kind of bubbles up inside of us. And our selection of partners and our reaction to difference all originate in the unconscious, which is part of why it seems so hard to do relationship. Because your conscious mind, if you give it a job, like figure out what's going on here with this relationship, it will just get to work and start trying to figure this thing out with conscious, logical thought, which has nothing to do, according to us, with what's going on. And so it's just like a car stuck in the snow. You keep stepping on the gas, the car will respond the way it always has, spinning the wheels harder and harder and harder, making that loud whirring noise, which is the one you get in your head when you're in a relationship which seems to be going south and you can't understand why, the issue is not that you haven't thought this thing through or you didn't consciously select the right person. So let's find out what's really going on in relationship with the unconscious. Looking at relationships from a needs-based perspective, it seems to us that couples, even those who are caught in the vicious cycle of conflict, have actually done an amazing job of finding their needs-based complement match. Remember, that's what we talked about yesterday, that basically what your unconscious is looking for is someone who has the complementary set of skills to get the needs met in life that you're not good at meeting. So if you're very logical and you're really good at getting bills paid and stuff, you're likely to pick someone who's really spontaneous and artistic and can get that whole other set of beautiful needs met. Now you're living with somebody, they're living with somebody who's really different than you. This doesn't necessarily mean that the two of you are destined to make it through all the healing that is required to learn how to accept these differences. There may be other factors, like addiction or limiting beliefs, that might mean that you're not suited as primary partners. But we maintain that your dissatisfaction with this partner is more about your understanding of your internal needs and need for healing than about the challenges that your partner's differences represent. We maintain that the differences add to your life, which you experienced during the infatuation period, also sometimes called NRE. So clearly those differences are not the problem. So what is? What's most amazing is that even though you managed to select someone who has shown they can meet your most deep and hidden needs because of the difference, your conscious mind continues to believe that these qualities are the very ones you must train out of your partner. So you've just spent 18 months to 3 years experiencing the delight of getting these needs met by this person because of their difference. And somehow the conscious mind like gets amnesia about that and goes right to that must be the problem. Difference must be the problem. And what we have to do is train them out of that difference. They're just mistaken, which is a moral judgment, according to NBC, considering the other person to be bad or wrong. And judgments, as we shall see, are the relationship buster. Instead of benefiting from your partner's carefree spontaneity, which is an unmet need of yours, you now want your partner to become better organized and better structured, in this example. The excitement and satisfaction from those differences, which you selected, changes when those same differences show up when the two of you are under more stress, i.e. moving in together, starting to do life, have kids, your work. So now, the very differences that at first were so endearing and drew you to one another become the igniting force behind conflict. Think about it for a second. The very thing that attracted you to them is now the igniting force for the conflict. I mean, shouldn't your conscious mind like notice that and say, well, wait a minute. We just love that. Why are we hating that now? Maybe they didn't change. Maybe there's something going on for us. Maybe. Instead of satisfying each other's needs, couples in the conflict stage attack their partners for those very same differences that attracted them. The other person's gift now becomes their biggest shortcoming. I can't wait to hear how this turns out. This shift in perception from what a gift to we have a problem is the turning point in a relationship. It is what causes you to question your choice of partner. It repeatedly turns those little moments of potential intimacy, which is what we consider conflict, a moment of potential intimacy, into those same old arguments. And they will become the same old arguments. You're going to have the same argument over and over and over again because you're arguing about something which is in fact a fact. They are different from you. They're not just trying to annoy you. That's really who they are, and that's who you need. It does this because the differences are real. See, me and the book agree. They are not going to go away. And changing partners won't help, because you need these exact differences to complete yourself. That's why second and third marriages fail so quickly. People keep selecting the same beneficial differences in different forms. They look a little different each time. And then keep trying to kill them off in each successive partner. Patterns, people. Break those patterns. Differences are a double-edged sword. On the surface, differences are the difficulty that threatens to break your relationship apart. Underneath, they're the gap across which we touch each other. Sweet, sweet writing here. Get to know each other. Heal each other. We consider relationship. One of the potential titles of my book was The Surprising Purpose of Marriage. The answer? To be co-healers, to help heal each other. And benefit from. When a difference shows up, if you handle that moment correctly, nonviolently, as part of a team, you create intimacy. If you treat it as a problem, either of your relationship or of your partner, you create conflict. You. Each of you who treats the situation as a problem, that's what's causing the conflict. To make relationships work, you need to learn how to deal constructively with differences, which just isn't taught in mainstream culture. And, which is why we picked mediation, which is the art and science of dealing with difference, as our technology instead of therapy. And here we are, where I suggested that we would be. I love this subtitle. Judgment is the relationship buster. Judgment is the relationship buster. It bears repeating. It's unfortunate that it's also the most likely way for people to respond to the frustrations that often result from differences when they're not handled skillfully. What differentiates how you experience the second stage of your relationship, either as the difference or conflict stage, is whether or not you choose to express your needs as judgments. And that is what's really going on. This whole thing about what's wrong with them is not the issue. The issue is you're noticing that a need of yours is not getting met by the way they're doing things differently than you expect. And in the process of communicating that simple, perfectly reasonable, absolutely important piece of information to communicate to your spouse, the way, the form in which you choose to express those needs is the alpha and the omega. It's everything. That will determine which way the second stage is experienced, how you choose to communicate. If you explore your differences gracefully, what we call the quiet, truthful, needs-based conversation, you learn about how your differences can create deeper intimacy, and you'll therefore experience this stage as the difference stage. If instead you let your frustration be expressed as judgments of your partner for not meeting your needs, it will create the vicious cycle of conflict. That often looks like this. One party gets frustrated because they aren't getting their needs met in the particular way they are expecting, and so they communicate their dissatisfaction as a judgment of their partner. You never care about what I want. By the way, listening for the words never and always is a good way to identify when a particular kind of need, what we call a forbidden need, is showing up. More about that later. This scares and likely hurts your partner, who feels attacked, and rightly so. The partner strikes back in defense for what, in their mind, was an unprovoked attack. Do you get this? That most people don't notice the form in which they're communicating. you know, I have couples with me all the time on the couch or on Skype. And one of them will do this. They'll express their need as a judgment. And if you interview the person in that moment, they'll say, wow, I did a great job there. Yeah, I told them what I was needing. I even showed them how important it was to me by the force in which I communicated it. And now we'll see if they're willing to meet that need or not. The answer is not. First of all, you didn't communicate your need. You communicated a judgment of them. They didn't hear a need. If they did, because they love you and they're good at meeting your needs, they would have delighted in meeting it. They didn't. What they heard was an attack. But you didn't think you were attacking them because you weren't paying attention to the form in which you were communicating. And so when they attack back, it seems to you that right after you were, quote, vulnerable, unquote, and shared what it was you were needing, they attacked you, which proves how bad they are and how you picked the wrong person. But that isn't what it proves at all. What it proves is form matters, and you did just attack them. So this is the sandbox fight that couples have. You know, the 2-3-year-olds fighting in the sandbox, and the parent, or in this case, marriage mediator, comes over and says, all right, what's going on here? And the person who started this says, they hit me first. And that is your real experience. You do believe they started it, but they didn't. You did. You just didn't notice that by using a judgment, well, judgments are the relationship buster. Have I mentioned that? I think I did. The response, amazingly, is perceived by the judger as worse than an unprovoked attack because they didn't perceive their judgment as an attack. They were just, quote, asking for what they needed. It's considered worse because it came in response to a, quote, request from their partner in need, so it reinforces the first person's fear that their partner really doesn't understand or care what their needs are. The first person then expresses their increased frustration and despair with even more justifiable anger. So now the person who began this by expressing their needs as a judgment is defending their self against what they believe is the unprovoked attack, and now they're going to up the ante because now they have justifiable anger. You see, the other person did an unprovoked attack as they perceive it. And there's literally no top end to how far the argument, which was actually about a single unmet need expressed as a judgment, can escalate. And notice, we're miles away from talking about the need, right? What we're doing now is talking about the reaction to the reaction to the reaction to the form. Yeah. Eventually, this argument will come to a stopping point. But without understanding the need cause, it is ripe for happening again and again, resulting in a lifetime of those same old arguments. As if that isn't bad enough, each fight not only doesn't resolve anything, but also the very fabric of the relationship begins to fray. Your trust in each other and in the sense that the other person cares about you and cares about your needs gets torn a little bit more every time you cycle through this same fight, which you will do over and over and over again because the need is not being mentioned and therefore not being met and therefore continues to be frustrated. So this fight will start up again and again and again. Trust is the first to go. Then the need for peace and serenity. The worst part is that the feeling that you have each other's backs, that you're on the same team, begins to shift into enemy mode. Right? You're fighting now regularly. This was one need. There's tons of them that are going to start causing this to happen. But even just one keeps coming and coming up and coming up. You keep fighting and fighting and fighting. So who are you fighting with? Your teammate? Your lover? It starts to feel like you're fighting with your enemy. And we were talking about this being an unconscious process. What I want you to know is the way that you hypnotize a person is by repeating the same strong emotioned experience over and over again. pretty quickly, you and your partner are starting to hypnotize each other into going into this patterned behavior. Now your conscious mind is really at a disadvantage. It has no idea what to do once you go into trance. The trance of war, the trance of being in enemy mode, the trance of despair. That's when the real despair sets in. See, me and the guy who wrote this book are in agreement. Before you know it, you are both walking on eggshells. Man, I feel so bad when people come in that first time and one or the other one of them almost always says that, you know? So how are you doing? God, I'm walking on eggshells. Because it just seems like anything you say is going to set this off. Yeah, if you don't notice the form in which you say it and you keep saying it in a judgmental form, it will keep setting it off. So walking on eggshells isn't going to help you. A phrase that we hear all the time. The conflict stage ends only when couples stop responding to their difference by judging each other. This is the end of the same old arguments and the beginning of the difference stage, where we learn how to get the benefit of our differences. The image that your partner is wrong for you or thinks badly of you is so convincing. It just seems real. It doesn't matter how much they protest that they aren't doing whatever it is you're accusing them of doing. That just convinces you how bad they are. They won't even be self-responsible for their wrongdoing. I do this all the time in session. You know, a person will complain about their partner being this and that and doesn't care about them. And I go, you know, we have an expert right here. Your partner's right there. Let me check out. Do you not care about them at all? Do you not care about their needs? And the person will say, of course that's not true. Of course I care about their needs. And the other person will go, see, they don't care. It's like preferring the way you what you believe to be true over the evidence of the actual person telling you their truth guarantees that you're going to stay locked in this vicious cycle and that you're going to be unhappy. People are motivated by these beautiful life-affirming needs. So if your interpretation of another person is that they're evil in their intention, because everybody's intention comes from these beautiful positive needs, you would be better off making the assumption that your interpretation is wrong and trying to make what we call the best possible interpretation of what's going on for them. Relationships cannot survive the worst possible interpretation. If there's a possibility that your negative interpretation is incorrect, switch it. You know, I could say to you, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make eggs for breakfast for you tomorrow. Now, the worst possible interpretation, you can go, why? You don't like the way I make eggs? Or, why? You don't think I can take care of myself? You think you have to feed me? I mean, how can I really? No, I'm going to get up early to get the kids off to school. I thought it'd be nice. I'm kind of in the mood for eggs. I'll make extra eggs. I'll make them just the way you like them. Best possible interpretation is more likely. You may be wrong 1% of the time. Worst possible interpretation, 99% of the time. People use judgments to protect themselves, but then they end up stuck in it. It is hard to calculate how many couples are giving up by using harsh judgments in such a tender place as a relationship. But once both partners start getting their needs met consistently, the spell is lifted and they can move into the third stage, the mature relationship. So I have these little breakout boxes. My editor suggested that sometimes some of the stuff I wrote should be broken out into a box. And here's a box broken out about judgments. NVC, nonviolent communication, differentiates moral judgments, like you're a bad person, or I'm right and you're wrong, from value judgments, like I like oranges better than apples. In this book, when we use the word judgment, we're always talking about moral judgments of other people. So anytime you're thinking or speaking about another person, particularly your partner, and you have it in mind that they're bad or wrong, you're making a moral judgment, and if you communicate that to them, and we don't even have to actually say it. I had a couple who came in, and this woman said horrible judgments of her husband, and I talked to her about moral judgments, that saying them was violent, and she was smart, and she started to get it, and so she stopped saying moral judgments of her partner. And then I asked her a question like, okay, so now I know that you guys have been having some trouble doing co-parenting and stuff, but given the fact that we're over the moral judgments, how do you feel about co-parenting with your partner? And she went, oh my God, you just taught me something. Judgments don't have to be verbal. You just did an eyebrow judgment and an eye lift judgment. There are 90 muscles or something in the face. You cannot control the muscles in your face. If you're in judgment of your partner, it will be communicated through either the tone of voice. You can't say a sentence that doesn't sound like judgment if you're in judgment. We are not trying to teach you to be in judgment and sound like you're not. It doesn't work. The goal of this process of teamwork mediation is to get you out of judgment. Not just because it's violent and we'd like to be in a world with you and everyone else who's not violent, but because it blocks you from getting your beautiful needs met. And if you're with someone you love, it blocks them from being able to love you and meet your needs. It doesn't work. I've been doing this for 15 years, and I have had a few people quit on me because they insisted that they couldn't live their life without their judgments. They couldn't separate moral and value judgments, but besides the point. You are going to have judgments. It is one of the ways we respond to our frustration. I do it. Everybody does it. What we want to teach you here is how to translate your own judgments into beautiful expressions of your beautiful life-affirming needs so that you can get them met. That's what we want for you. We want you to have your beautiful needs met. And since you went to the trouble in this whole wide world of finding someone who's an expert at meeting the needs of yours that you don't know how to meet yourself, don't shut off the faucet by the form in which you communicate. Now, what I suggest to my clients when we first start in this process, because it is so hard to stop judging, to even get your brain working again, because judgment itself is a trance, to even get your brain working to, like, what else could you possibly say, is tough. So here's your homework for today. I like to end with giving you homework. You will have judgments in the next 24 hours. I hope to see you again in 24 when we read the next piece of this chapter, which is stage 3, the mature relationship, where you get the goodies again. You'll want to come back for that. In the next 23 and a half hours, notice your judgments of yourself. Marshall says one of the most violent places in the world is inside our own heads, and judgments of others. If you're in relationship, think about the judgments you have of your partner. You probably could write 2 pages. I do an exercise where couples do that, and it's not hard to fill a page up if you've been together for a while. So first of all, do that. So noticing judgments. Awareness is the first step in making change. Write them down. And tomorrow, for extra credit, I always like to give you extra credit, see if you can figure out what the need is that's underneath the judgment. And here's a clue. We're going to get into this in much more detail later. The need is almost always the opposite of the judgment. So if the judgment is, my partner is uncaring, the need is you're wanting more caring. Like that. Now, a lot of them are done pretty artfully. They're done by the unconscious, which is the maker of your dreams. Think about how artful and creative the unconscious is. So they're not all that easy. But at the very least, begin noticing the times at which you have judgments and bring them, because we'll start teaching you how to turn them into beautiful requests of your partner So we're going to begin the process of translating your judgments into beautiful NVC requests and see if, in fact, I'm right that your partner, instead of responding the way they have been, will suddenly do 180 turnaround, and that person you fell in love with before that you thought was gone, they may still be there. Let's see if we can find them together. This is Max Rivers saying, learn to love conflict. It's how we do love. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.